What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
We'll move on to our second award. I'll let you explain where we're headed next, Mr. Simus.
I'm just fired up by this title. The Fast Shitting Dog Award. Henry's coming in with Topo. It's going to be a great episode, guys.
Topo!
We'll keep him here for the Ron Weasley Award.
Ron Weasley.
This is the Mr. Clean Award, and this is important. It's very important for people to fully understand this award.
And I am just scratching for one more Scotty run. Like, I want it so bad. I'm not sure if I'm going to get it.
And there are two guys in the elevator with me. One, let's just say I don't think he'd ever been lost on his way to the dinner table, had a sweet green bag in hand. And then the other guy in the elevator, just absolutely jacked with McDonald's in hand, which I thought just funny kind of societal juxtaposition of things. I wish that those guys were like carrying grocery bags or something to go up and cook their own meals. We've talked about this before, but that's beside the point. Mudball Monday. Here we are. Let's get after it. Episode 105. I don't know what we're talking about today. It's postseason awards time, tie style. This is not, you know, most valuable player and most improved or any of that sort of junk. No, these are going to be some more interesting categories here that we will have to kind of hash out what exactly we're getting at. But it'll be fun. Of course, before we do that, we're going to get to the dirt. I'll let you lead it off, Walker Simus. First of all, how you doing? And what's your dirt for the week?
Sup, ladies and gents. No, I'm good. We're recording here on a Wednesday, which is odd but wonderful. Like, feeling great.
Recording.
Yeah. No, but all is well. Straight into the dirt. We will spare no time because we've got plenty of stones to turn over today. Drinking again quite early in the week, but just absolutely ripping Goodwill coffee. Breakfast ball is the blend of choice these days. I've got, you know, so I ordered the 5-pound staff bag. And for those of you who are going with the smaller bags, I respect it, but I want to propose an alternative. It is a very real thing, a very nice thing to have a big old bag of beans in your drawer in the morning. It's, I don't know what it is about just knowing you have a surplus of beans, but it makes me feel better when I wake up. And it's as simple as that. So I really enjoyed that.
I second that. I too am staff bagging it at the moment.
It's just great. And there's no other reason for it than I wake up and know that if all hell breaks loose outside, I've got beans for a while. So if you guys feel passionately enough about that, we'll work on getting a 5-pound staffer for the Mudball Half Calf. I'd be more than happy if you guys knocked down our door on that one. But for all your good walk needs, as we mention every week, we will never fail to mention it. HammerGoodWalkCoffee.com. You can buy merchandise, subscribe for your subscription package, your custom subscription package, order all sorts of beans and goodness over there. So get over there, use code THETIE, that is THETIE, and go get after it. Eating.
Hey, show the fine people what you got on right now. You're repping a little merch.
I've got some Goodwalk merch, a little H&B, and very, very, very much enjoying the quality. It's lucky enough.
Only. No free.
We're lucky enough to wear some good stuff throughout the week. I wear dratty stuff at work. I love this stuff. I think the H&B collars, I would say, are top of the line right now.
I was holding my breath on what you were going to say there. Firm.
If anybody's making better collars right now, I am not aware of it.
Firm up top, firm down below, just the way we like it.
I'll leave that to you, Shimpy.
Eating.
We have a lot to talk about here. Tacos. We're sitting here the day after the big day. That is National Taco Day. What are we talking? Gosh, how many tacos between us? Somewhere in the neighborhood of
25. I went for 12.
Did you? All right,
I had two. So, I went progressively smaller. I had two units of breakfast tacos in house. I mean, really, like small.
That's
burritos.
What I. That's what I was looking to address. Was the morning shift a burrito situation or was it a taco situation?
They were near burritos. It was like right in between the two, I would say. They were large tacos or small burritos, whichever one you want to look at. So this is your dirt. I'm out of here. What do you got?
So I'll run you through my thinking really quick. The day just kind of got turned upside down. I got kind of an SOS call in the morning and was planning to do tacos in house. So we just completely shifted breakfast tacos, which I was prepared to do and ready to do, to the evening, which, as the day turned out, was probably the best play. But I hit a spot that I've been looking to go to for a while. So I live a little bit south of Tampa, like the Tampa proper, the city, and I work 45 minutes to an hour north of Tampa, which is beautiful. Like, I love the contrast. It's actually some remnants of nature up there, but there are a lot of highly legit Mexican spots between where I live and work. Most of them are just really inconvenient to get to on the way back from work or whatever else. So it's hard to knock some of those places off the list. This place was recommended to me by a couple people, and I was told to go see Maggie. And I walked in. Luckily, she was there. We had this really great conversation. I think she was the only person in the entire building who spoke a lick of English. And if you're looking for good tacos, I think that's kind of what you're looking for. And I said, I just want five tacos. I was pretty adamant about going, you know, barbacoa, carnitas, some sort of like asada or pastor, but I did want one of the more home run legit ones. And I know this is my dirt, but I do want to have a conversation about lingua, beef tongue tacos. When I had a taco in Austin with you, I believe it was lingua. And it was really good. And it was like broken down. All the fat was kind of broken down. And it was not like a paste, but it was definitely a softer texture than what I had. And this one kind of turned me off. Like, if I'm having beef tongue, I kind of want it to be charred and blitzed. And it was not. Like, I got all the beef tongue. So curious on your thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, you had lingua at Quantos, where I went last night, and I don't recall them doing this in the past, but they actually asked me last night. They said, hey, on that lingua, do you want it crispy or standard? And I was like, what kind of question is that? I mean, we want everything crispy, which was just it's just awesome. So yeah, I'm with you there. Like, I feel like my tongue would have like an extra sense to it, you know, after eating some kind of chewier beef tongue.
It was pretty tongue-y.
Yeah.
It was pretty tongue-y.
It's like eating brains allegedly makes you smarter.
Yeah. It was a good day. I'm tacoed out, as I said in Mudball Monday last week. We're gonna take a little taco hiatus, a little taco vacation. And that will absolutely do it for my eating this week. Reading. I can't say that I've picked up a book since we recorded last for Mudball Monday. I have been doing a decent amount of listening. I'm interviewing Casey Bannon from the Golfers Journal coming up here shortly. Looking forward to bringing you guys that one. Looking forward to having that conversation. Casey's just seems like a really grounded dude. He went to college like right near where I work, which is a place that almost nobody's been. So I'm anxious to hear about that and all his travels, his new podcast, Mind Game, through the Golfers Journal. I've been listening to quite a bit. And then the Nick Bear podcast. Shout out to BPN Sups out of Austin, Texas. Two free ads today on the reading/listening category.
Ripping the free ads.
Ripping free ads. Bless. Hey, but sometimes you just got to give the love. Give the love and it all comes back to you.
Live off love. What is money? God.
Thinking. I've done a lot of thinking about writing this week. I've been hammering the journal pretty hard, and then reaching into the journal this week for the weekly newsletter. If you haven't taken a look or subscribed to our weekly newsletter at the Tie Podcast, I highly recommend you doing that. It will make it easy for you to do so, but I can't click the button for you. So that will do it for my dirt this week. Henry Schimpf. I'll toss it back to you. What you got?
Well, I will say that it is Good Walk Coffee that I'm drinking, but you already gave people the discount code and where to go, so I will spare any more of that. But a little inspiration off of you. So this, you know, I'm a routines junkie. I love hearing about people's zen, like how do you get the engines firing day to day? How do you shut things down? I just love learning, you know, how people go about their day, essentially. So the way I've been starting mine off is brewing like, I don't know, 25-ish ounces, 24-ish ounces of Good Walk, usually half calf. Sometimes if I'm feeling frisky, I'll go full calf. It just depends. And I'll kind of down 10-ish ounces, 12-ish ounces as I'm maybe editing a pod or writing something or doing work for the day job, whatever it is, kind of in the first 30-ish minutes of the day. That serves a very clear purpose. You know, it kind of gets my wits about me, takes me into a different room of my apartment. And then I come back out and I take the other, you know, whatever's left over. I guess we're working on 14, 12 ounces or so. I throw that in my just like standard water bottle, a few ice cubes, a little chocolate electrolyte powder, and the cinnamon is what made it into the rotation this week. And just like the tip, I love to just go absolutely hammer time on cinnamon. Like if it's an oats or something like that, I'm a massive cinnamon guy. But when it comes to coffee, especially as a complement to chocolate, the goal is to see like how little I can get in there to get just that twinge of cinnamon. And so it's been a really nice way to start the day. That, and then just been, I think water is one of those things you can't really, I mean, I guess you could technically drink too much water. But I've been trying to just like drink as much as I can to see kind of how I feel. And typically I find I only feel a little bit better. So that's my drinking. Moving into my eating for this week. So as you said, we're recording here on a Wednesday. So this is what I'm planning on eating, heading to the Roaring Gap Club this weekend. Very excited for that. And so, you know, there will be at least, I'd say at least four. I think the over under is 4.5 on country ham and egg biscuits that I will be downing. So that's a lot to look forward to. And then, you know, this is kind of tapping into the fitness side of things. Makes me think we're doing a self here. Been trying making that push to 200 late in the year. I've just really stagnated. You know, I mean, it's how the bullshit goes. Like if you've been focused on strength training, as you add more strength, the metabolism goes up, you have to eat more. That's just simply how it is. And so I feel like I keep bumping up the food higher and higher, and the weight just is, it's just freaking flatlining. And so it's kind of an interesting predicament because I mean, I know a lot of people are just like, get a fucking tub of ice cream and some beers, which yes, that would work. But I care about how I feel day to day, and those things definitely don't make me feel great. But then the other thing, look, I love some rice. I love potatoes. I love all that stuff because what we're looking for here is carbs. Like protein's too efficient from a metabolic standpoint. If you just up the protein, it doesn't really make that much of a difference if you're trying to gain weight. And so it's great for weight loss. It's great for muscle building. But what I've been going to is just fruit, baby, because the thing is I don't want to eat like a ton of rice because then I feel a little bit extra. Like I eat a lot of rice, but I don't want to eat like another extra cup and a half of rice on a daily basis because then I just feel like extra kind of bloated and not as good the next day. And that suppresses my appetite that day. So it's all about like, what can I eat today that then tomorrow is going to allow me to continue to eat? And what I've been leaning on, Big Apple, Big Blueberry. I can sit here. That's what makes Big Blueberry so magical, is that not only does it taste really great, I know it's not calorically dense, but I can sit here at night. Like if I'm editing a podcast or something, I'll dump 4 cups of blueberry. Like, you know, I'll have like a little mug going and I just like drink them basically. Yes. I'll do 4 of those and just keep on running. Yeah. And, you know, it's like an anti-inflammatory deal. And so rather than waking up the next day feeling like, oh God, like what did I do? I like feel better. So I know it sounds weird to say like my weight gain gamer has been blueberries, but I'm a weird dude. And so that's what I've been going with. I think Big Grape needs to make its way into the fold as well, because I can go hammer time on some frozen grapes. And that's kind of the same deal. Like you're not going to wake up feeling shitty after eating 150 grapes, but you know, grapes are one of those things. They don't count. You know, some things like popcorn, you sit there and eat popcorn. You could back up a truck of popcorn and most people would finish it. Like grapes to me are the same way. It's just kind of one after the other. So that was a long and weird reading. eating. And so for that reason, I will actually not move on to my reading. For the first time ever, I'm going to game a different word here. I'm going to take one out of your book and go with rotation. I did. So I'm dipping into the Roger Federer book, but I mean, only 2 days removed from our last recording. I don't have that much to report just yet. So I'll look forward to sharing that next week on Mudball Monday. But I'm going to go into my rotation. I don't know that I've ever really talked about what I like to listen to. You know, one of the things that I like about where I live, I only spend 25 to 35 minutes in the car on a daily basis on a standard weekday, which I love. I hate being in the car. I think cars suck. I think it's a bad place. Just it's for me, I don't like being in a car. So spending as little time as possible in a car is a great thing for me. So I don't really, I listen to podcasts while I work. I don't listen to music. I'll listen to a little bit of music in the car, but mostly I'm only listening to music while I'm working out. And so that kind of pushes you towards a general sort of genre. I mean, I'm sure people listen to Beethoven. There are serial killers out there while they're working out. But that is what it is. I found this band like, I don't know, about a month ago called Hot Mulligan, and great name for Mudball Monday here. The way I actually found it is, on some, you know, Discover or whatever, they have this song called Shush Golf Is On. And I'm like, that's weird. I don't know what we're getting at, but okay. And all of the names of their songs, just like really strange stuff. And it's kind of like Nirvana meets Smashing Pumpkins with a little bit of like Machine Gun Kelly or something like that. It's like pop punk, but rather melodic. Like it's not just like, it's not Victor Hovland's metal in your face. It's actually really good. Like it kind of was a joke with one of my buddies, shout out D Lead, that because he knows every song on the face of the earth. It was like, oh God, you know, this is kind of funny stuff. And it was like, these songs are actually kind of good. And then like I kept listening to more and I was like, they're all kind of good. And so that's been my rotation lately. Hot Mulligan, anyone that appreciates some kind of, you know, grunge, pop punk, any of those sorts of genres. It's a decent way to go. So that's the rotation. And then finally, finishing off with my thinking, this has been a longer dirt, and this might not be a short one either, but I'll try to keep it concise. I love the comment you made when we were talking about the Ryder Cup a couple pods back on, you know, the whole week, it just kind of smelled like horse shit. It really did. And I'm still nursing just a gnarly Ryder Cup hangover. Like I've kind of resuscitated myself. You know, I'm hydrated. I've gotten some decent food in me, but like, I'm not ready to go work out or anything. You know, like I'm still feeling hungover from the Ryder Cup, and I've been consuming just tons of information, be it podcasts, writing, all of this stuff. And what I'm really disenchanted with, I've kind of learned a couple things here, is there's so many conflicting viewpoints out there. They're not viewpoints. These are people that are reporting these things as journalistic, and people that are in the know, like they either directly know people and things themselves, or they have great access to information. And I'm just like, from one person, I'm hearing like, no, he's a great guy. Everybody loves him. And then the other side, I'm hearing like, I didn't realize how bad of a guy this dude is. And so my head is just kind of spinning on this whole deal. And what I think I've learned from that is, as we continue to build our voice in this whole deal, the importance of recognizing the difference between a take and journalism. Like when you're saying something that is meant to be fact and you're communicating that to the golf community, you can't just shoot from the hip because you think you got some great lead that may or may not really be based on fact. You know, that doesn't really fly. Whereas a take is a take. You know, like if I say Michael Block is what would have made the difference, he should have been on the US Ryder Cup team, that's a take. That's bullshittery. But it is what it is. I'm not out here trying to like prove a point to anybody. Whereas, you know, I'll just keep the names out of it. But if you're going to like write a tweet and an article and whatnot and say that one of the US players was wearing a hat or not wearing a hat rather to try to stir up controversy, I think that's exactly what you're doing there, bud. So anyway, before I fall to the same fate, let's move on from that and let's talk about some of our Thai podcast accolades for the 2023 PGA Tour season. I'll start off with our first one here, but I'll let you lead with your player. So first thing we're going with here, the Stuart Sink Award, the theft of joy, a player that, you know, it's no shade to this guy necessarily, but it's someone that just like, they took something from us that everybody clearly wanted. So who is a player that comes to mind for you, Mr. Simas, who was a theft of the golfing world's joy this year?
I think of all these, and by the way, as we continue through these episodes, I really love these awards. Like these are going to be fun to do in years future. And maybe my picks today, particularly this one, not necessarily the person who disappointed all of us, but the person who disappointed me, at least. And I fear Henry's coming in with Topo. It's going to be a great episode, guys.
Topo!
I fear that this person just does not deserve the take that I'm going to present for the Stewart Cink Award. So, this is the one that really got me. Zalatoris making a pretty significant run up the world rankings. Two second place finishes in majors, gunning for his first major at the U.S. Open at Brookline. And I've been critical of Fitzy before, not with like a ton of basis. I've just never really loved the guy. Like, I've always wanted somebody else in the mix to win over Fitzy. And while it was a great story, I really, really wanted Zalatoris to win that U.S. Open. Now, that's not enough to make this take. But the one that really got me, the doubleheader, was at the RBC this year, where Spieth was kind of climbing out of his funk. He had a lot of really interesting guys on the board. Like, Thigala was getting close. He really did have a chance to win that one. Who else was in the mix? Cantlay was in the mix. Schauffele was in the mix. And, of course, our guy, Jay Spieth.
Going your for, boys, Cantlay and Schauffele. That's who you're riding for these days.
I really like Schauffele. Always been a big Schauffele fan. I can't say that I'm a huge fan of Cantlay's, irregardless of what is actually true about last week. I really don't care as much as other people seem to. But no, I like both those guys. But I really wanted the Gala to be in the mix, and I also wanted Spieth to win. And then the playoff, dude, those two putts that Spieth hit, first on 18, which was just a brutal lip out, and then going back to 17, rolled just nearly a perfect putt and it didn't go in, that one killed me. So I just feel like Fitzy's always in the mix when I want somebody else to win, and it's nothing that he did wrong. I was looking through his record earlier this year, and like, dude's got his fair share of like T2s and T3s that could have gone his way. So I don't know. I just feel like Fitzy's always the one in the way. But he's one of those guys where, like, I know if I got to play 18 holes with him or something, that my opinion would just change entirely. But until I do, that's who he's going to be to me. So probably my least favorite take of the day, but nonetheless, the Stewart Cink Award. Matt Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I'm trying to like come up with something to add here, and I just don't have much. Like, I'm with you. I have nothing against Matt Fitzpatrick, but I'm like, if you told me right now that Matt Fitzpatrick was going to win the Masters in 2024, which is it's possible, I'd just kind of be like,
yeah, yeah.
Well done, but darn, you know, it's just,
yeah.
I wouldn't say damn it. I'd say darn. That's kind of how I feel when he wins. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's just like, darn it.
I concur. I concur.
Yeah. Okay. My winner of the Stewart Cink Award. And this, you know, this could go a lot of ways. Like, we could have picked someone with great calves. I mean, Cink's calves are just unbelievable. We could have picked someone who likes a nice piece of smoked meat. We could have picked someone who is just completely and utterly hairless. But the guy that I went with is a true thief of joy, the thief of joy of 2023, Wyndham Clark. Kind of similar vibes here. Frankly, I don't really like Wyndham that much, if I'm just being completely honest here, and for no good reason. I just don't really like him all that much. I respect the guy. I mean, he's just a fantastic golfer. His swing and ball striking is unbelievable. He clearly works super hard in the gym, on the course, on his game. Like, he really impressive guy. But I mean, he ousted Rory in a US Open that Rory played great in. And it was just another one of those Rory majors, slow moving train, you know, nothing going right. And we're just sitting there waiting for Wyndham to falter. And if I recall, 15, he might have made bogey, the par three. Don't know if I'm correct there. Definitely bogey the 16th. And then, you know, a lot of people kind of take issue is probably the way to put it with the tee ball on the 18th and the rough being not pulled in more and saying he should have been in trouble. I mean, look, it just, that is what it is. But the one that just bites me is the 17th. And look, it kind of the same thing. It's like golf course is what it is. Like, I'm not saying that the golf course should be different than the way it is necessarily, but I mean, it's a 500 some yard par four, back left pin, bunker left, green runs away from left to right. Guy hits just a hot ass pull, and he's got just the most basic chip of all time that he hits to like 4 inches. Now, you know, if you put in other people, you may say, then that chip probably doesn't go to 4 inches. But that to me is like quintessential US Open, that he should have been taking a one-way trip to Bonerville after that shot. And instead, he's just like sitting pretty. So that was the one that really hurt. I mean, I was with that shot off the club face, I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go. And nothing. So Wyndham Clark, you know, I know I'm throwing the guy a lot of shade. It's not really deserved, but he's my winner of the Stewart Cink Award this year. So we'll move on to our second award. I'll let you explain where we're headed next, Mr. Simas.
I'm just fired up by this title. The Fast Shitting Dog Award. Just perfect. Sounds like me every morning. The theme of this award is somebody who, and I guess we're talking purely 2023 here, but somebody who came out pretty hot and just kind of didn't sustain it, like just dropped the log too fast. Sometimes you've got to just like Rory's US Open performances, just be methodical about your shits instead of just ripping it all at one time. So
I'm more the latter, but we got to move on from that. Let's get to the golf.
Without further ado, I thought of two people immediately, and they seem like obvious takes. And upon further investigation, one is more clear than the other. And the two people that I thought of were Scotty first and JT second. JT, just because his drop in everything this year was like prolific.
And JT is most definitely still on the pot, if I may say so myself.
Right. And then with Scotty, I just kept thinking about how he literally, and it's hard to do this with golf because you can play the coulda, woulda, shoulda game till you just pass out. But Scotty could have won like 10 times this year had he putted the way that he did from February to May of 22, which was honestly not that impressive relative to the kind of golf that he's playing amongst the players that he's playing against and their putting performances. Like, if Scotty putted, let's just say, top 25 on tour putting, not top 10.
It's game over.
It's game over this year. Like we don't talk about anything else other than Scotty Scheffler all year. And that's pretty significant in my book. And because he did start off 2023, at least based on his finishes, in a pretty special way, I just felt like he dropped the shit pretty fast. And then like carrying it through the year, like I'll just take y'all through really what transpired in 23. So 22, he has the tour championship. Win at Phoenix, win at the Players, the fifth major. Don't want to get into that. 67, 68, 73. That was the swipe. 65 to finish second in the PGA. After the PGA, it was seven straight top fives. All the while, he lost strokes strokes gained putting to the field in all of those seven top fives. T10 at the Masters, lost a shot putting. Third at Memorial, lost two shots putting. Charles Schwab at Colonial, T3, lost a shot putting. And then the U.S. Open, we just talked about Wyndham and Rory, but like he was right there. And had he putted even decently on a course that he's performed at before, that he's putted well at before, they probably have the best greens of anywhere on earth. I know that that tends to be the case at U.S. Opens in general, minus Chambers Bay. Maybe we're not talking about Rory and Wyndham at all. You just don't know. And then I felt like that T23 at the Open was long overdue. I mean, that was like the Scotty that we were feeling but not seeing on paper. And I guess really the fast shitting dog award does not at all imply that somebody isn't ready to kick some ass in 24. I just think that, you know, the putter kind of caught up to him and he's got some work to do and he'll do it. But we were legitimately looking at 8 to 10 wins this year, which is hard to comprehend, honestly, in the bald cat era. So, Henry Schimpp, who was your fast shitting dog?
My fast shitting dog will take it over to the Brothers 54. I got two guys from the Brothers 54 bucking their heads this week.
I love this.
Back to back orders here. So Brooks Koepka, T2 Augusta, leads after 54, arguably like too fast shitting at the Masters. Goes straight on from there to win at the PGA. Just pretty epic comeback. I've been on the record multiple times here saying I'm a Brooks fan. I like Brooks. And that was an exciting week. And then T17 at the US Open, keeps it rolling, playing, you know, pretty good golf. We're starting to trend off in the wrong direction. Then T64 at the British. I don't know why, but there's not a whole lot else to talk about. I didn't see a whole lot of other stats on his official world golf ranking. You know, that's a potentially a different conversation, but it is what it is. But makes the Ryder on the team, of course. And I have in my notes here, he was trash at the Ryder Cup. I'm going to go back a little bit. I don't think he was trash, but he was, you know, compostable, let's say. I've heard some takes that he was, you know, a decent teammate or pretty good teammate. His record was not stellar by any means. I've heard kind of the stat heads say that the 9 and 7, he was not nearly as bad as Scotty, but it's like, God damn, this is a true tallest midget sort of conversation here. If we're saying, oh, you lost 9 and 7, but you weren't the worst, you know, I think my biggest thing, like the Ryder Cup is what that was what really did it for me here. In that, especially in an away Ryder Cup, you need a villain. You need someone to get in there and just fully play into the hostile environment and the crowds. And that guy should be Brooks for the U.S. team. And I just, from a fan's perspective, and I know kind of what I said a moment ago, that like there have been some reports that maybe he was a pretty decent teammate actually, but like to some degree, this is like a performance, like it's a production. And if we are not getting any of that action from him, then I don't know. I'm just, it leaves me desiring something that I think he could fill the role of so nicely. You know, he's a fast shitting dog. You know, I'm not saying he's not a nice dog. I'm not saying that he's not gonna, you know, gonna be worshiping a porcelain throne again tomorrow morning. But this year it came out a little hot, and it came out nice. It came out damn nice, but you know, let's slow the roll a little bit next year, Brooks. A few extra volleys in there. No more. We're moving on from the fast shitting dog. If we have anybody left, we'll keep them here for the Ron Weasley Award.
Ron Weasley.
That's not where I was thinking exactly, but yeah, that too. So Ron Weasley, I mean, one of my favorite characters in any movie ever. Of course, it's a Tie podcast episode, and so we have to get a Harry Potter reference in here. One of my favorite quotes in a movie. This is so stupid because it's not even like a significant quote, but in the seventh, I don't know if it's part one or two, but I believe part one, seventh Harry Potter. It's when Ron has left after they're, you know, looking for Horcruxes, and it's Harry and Hermione, and Ron thinks they're like in cahoots and there's something going on, whatever. And Ron just comes into the tent with this like mean mug look on his face, just goes, "Yeah, I'm still here." So this is that guy that's saying, "Yeah, I'm still here." And my guy is Mr. Bryson DeChambeau. He's still here. And I don't really want to be reporting this, saying this, but, you know, we started the episode talking about journalism and the importance of like trying to be objective about things. And like, listen, at the end of the day, I mean, Bryson's trash at the Masters. If he even played the Masters, I mean, I can't fall to the same fate as you here of misreporting guys teeing it up in majors, but.
Regardless of whether he played or not, it was a par 67.
Because, yeah, I don't remember. So, anyway, ties for fourth at the PGA. That was significant. T20 at the U.S. Open with a 74 in the last round. I mean, he was a part of the storyline. And then as much as we love to make fun of the Brothers 54 and everything that goes out on that tour, I guess we can call it.
58.
He shot 61. He shot 58. He shot 363s. This is all in like his last four tournaments. He's had a T5, a T9, a second, and two wins in his last seven events. It's not bad. And there still are some guys out there that can play a little golf.
I hear the YouTube subscriptions are up too. So
you're not wrong about that. It's been a good year. YouTube game. Look, that guy's diversified. Like, If the PGA Tour never lets him back on, I mean, God knows the boy likes money. He's going to be able to make it. That's for sure. So I'm still here is what Bryson's saying to us. And I think that's a good thing for the game. Okay. So we started with Matt Fitzpatrick. And if you told me right now he won the 24 Masters, I would say the same thing that I said before. Darn. If you told me Bryson won the 24 Masters, I would say another four-letter word that starts with an F. But I think it's a good thing for the game to have the big golfer, the not quite as big golfer as he used to be, back in the game. He's still here.
Bryson's Champions Dinner would be fucking hilarious. God, it would be awesome. Neither here nor there. Dude, I thought I had so many ideas for the Ron Weasley Award. Like, I thought about giving Steve Stricker some love. Guy's had like six wins this year. He's just beating Bernhard down, which I
Padraig's
love.
A good pick, actually.
Padraig's a good pick. Padraig's always a good pick. So is Rocco. But my Ron Weasley Award is going to go to Tom Kim, because I feel like Tom's just been hanging out and we've all been moving on to other things. Like, it's sad, really. They were just all over him at the President's Cup. They were obviously right after Shriners. It was a pretty big deal. Young kid, great, great golf swing, all the rest.
Well, on a larger time horizon, I mean, objectively a recipient of a Fast Shitting Dog Award. I think he was last year's Fast Shitting Dog.
Yes, that's a wonderful point. And maybe there's a, you know, we'll have to extrapolate this out. Maybe you can help me put together a couple models, but maybe there's some sort of tie, if I dare, between, you know, the Fast Shitting Dog and the Ron Weasley Award, with like a 2 to 5 year gap in between. So we will.
I think we need to run some analysis as well on, you know, types of dogs and how they go about things, right? Because that's probably the second layer to it. Is like, is he a Labrador? Is he one of these little mutt dogs? One of those little things, you know? Anyway. On we go.
Yeah, so Tom Kim, certified dog. We just need to figure out what kind of dog he is. So we had a T16 at the Masters this year, which is relevant, but it's just not something we're going to be, you know, discussing on a Sunday in April. Final round 70, which was quite strong. Like, I think Sunday played quite tough this year, and There was, I think he, there were only six guys who shot better than 70 on set on Sunday, which is pretty legitimate. Cut of the PGA, T8 at the US Open with a bad start. Like, honestly, shot 73 in the first round, and had he somehow put together a 100 par round, he would have been very much in that thing. And then T2 at the Open, same story, 74 the first day. And had he knocked that down a little bit, he would have been right there. So I think that alone is evidence enough that Tom Kim was hanging out. Every finish he's had since July has been in the top 25, which I know that may not sound that great, but like, he's had some top 10 finishes. And obviously at this point in the year, the quality of events is, nobody's playing in big stuff right now, obviously. So I see him fucking some shit up next year. I really do. Buy low, sell high, Tom Kim, Ron Weasley. Moving on to the Sophomore Summer Award. Henry, I'll let you introduce the award and then give your guy.
The Sophomore Summer Award. So this is a guy, like, he's finished his first couple years in school. He, you know, he knows he's got two more ahead of him, but it's like, you're starting to crest that 50% mark, and every day that goes by now, you're closer to the end than you are to the start. It just starts to feel a little less sweet. A lot of people are going abroad these days in that fifth semester of school. You come back and all of a sudden you only got three semesters left. And so this is a guy that needs to win a major before it becomes too hard. We've talked about this before, that you can only, you know, it's like fighting a boxing match, right? Like, you're going to get your opportunities to win majors if you're a really great player. And in those first few rounds, like, if you can just kind of spar and stay in the game and stay mentally really engaged in it and not take too many big body shots, like, you'll be all right. You'll probably be able to come back in those next handful of rounds. You can win the fight. You can win a major. But if you take a haymaker early, one of those first few, you've got a really great opportunity to win. You are behind the eight ball. If you do it a couple times, you are screwed. And so, this is a guy that hasn't really, I don't think he's taken a haymaker. You know, he's taken some pretty swift shots to the body, but the only one I can really think of, you know, he led the 2019 Masters, which of course no one else was ever going to win. After his 15th hole, I remember him taking the lead. He's had some top 10s. He's been in there, but he's known to not play great at majors. But the guy, it's no hat pat. Okay, I'll go ahead and tease it. The guy is good at everything. And that's where I'm left pretty confused by the whole deal, is like, I think the narrative around him in the Ryder Cup is one of the reasons he's so good is because he's just going to be in there for all the formats, every hole. You really can't sink this guy because he's good at every single part of the game. And so I hear that, and then, and I see that, and then I think about his major record, and it just doesn't add up, because in bigger events under more pressure, on harder golf courses, those are all of the attributes that someone needs. And for some reason, No Hat Pat just hasn't really shown up that much in the majors. So where I'm coming from is, I think this is a guy that's still early. He's in early rounds, you know, and he's had, like, there've been some big punches made towards him, but he's dodged them all, you know, and he really hasn't even gotten into a fight yet. I mean, he has not found himself deep in the corner with a bruiser getting ready to just, like, land an absolute haymaker to his dome. But it's going to happen soon. He will be in a fight with Rom or Rory or Ricky or one of your, Ricky, God bless, that's not what I meant to say, Scotty. And we're going to see what happens. You know, I think that he's at a point in his career, 31. We've talked about this.
I think
so
31's
much.
It.
We can never get these things right, but that's okay. I think he's 31. He's at that point. No one's saying he's physically the best ever. Like, I don't think this is a guy that at age 38, as soon as I say this, he'll go win the US Open when he's 41. But I don't think at 38, Cantlay's going to be quite as good as he is now. I see him having a good handful, a large handful of good years ahead of him, but not 10 or 12. And so, It's time to get in there. It's time to stop kind of dancing around and showing some fancy footwork and just sparring with a guy every now and then and just pushing it off to the later rounds. You know, if you wait till the 10th round, like, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. If you only give yourself a couple rounds there to show people what you've got, then things get tough. So Cantlay, sophomore summer award, plenty of time left, but like you're on the clock. It's time to get after it.
Shit or get off the pot. I do think his swing, like he rotates around his spine really well. Like he seems
that that holds up.
Injury resistant. However, I mean, same thing with the guy that I'm about to mention. Like, if anything is going to become an issue, it's just going to be keeping up with the Gordon Sargents of the world. So, keep you posted. My sophomore summer award is going to go to perhaps one of my favorite guys ever, perhaps one of our favorite guys ever, Tommy Fleet Jesus. And I feel like this was... I was surprised when you didn't grab this one early. Felt like this was the obvious one. Six top fives in majors. And I looked back into those a little bit. Like, hasn't really been... Not like Jack Nicklaus vibes, where he's got like a million, you know, solo seconds that are like a shot apart. He's been in the mix in a couple majors, but none of them really that close. But it is what it is. It's 2017 U.S. Open at Erin Hills, won back going into Sunday. 2018 U.S. Open at Shinnecock, lost to Brooks Koepka by one. Keep in mind, those are two really long golf courses, two really difficult golf courses. And as a guy who's not known for being one of the longest out on tour, pretty impressive stuff. 2019 Open Championship at Portrush, lost to our other guy, Shane Lowry. What an awesome tournament that was, but he had no chance there. I think Shane won by like five or six. But I feel like Fleetwood is really close to peak performance. Like every part of his game is really solid. You can make an argument about driving distance, but he had a run back in like 2017 to 2020 that pretty much put him, as far as world rankings go, kind of where he is now. And I really feel like Fleetwood could just, he seems like a real momentum guy. Not that any of us aren't, but he seems like one win away, one breakthrough away from going on a tear. I really feel that. He definitely has what it takes. I like him personally at Pinehurst this year or next year, and Royal Troon. I think both of those like really fit his game. Last two majors of the year. So we will see. Fleet Jesus is going to be my sophomore summer award winner.
I think the only thing I would add there, I think he's started his junior year, actually. I would say Fleetwood, he's gone 32. Abroad. He's gone abroad for that fifth semester in school, and like he's back and he's like on cloud nine. You know, like he was in Italy. He knows a little bit about wine now. He's gained a few pounds. He's looking a little chubby. He was going out every night, but like he can schmooze. Like he knows what he's doing when he goes to dinner, and he's telling people how to swirl it, and he's tasting the notes, and like, life
showing
is
people
good.
What cigarettes are.
But yeah, exactly. But all of a sudden, so he's got this great semester ahead of him where he's just like so confident. And he's got this new knowledge that's just really applicable.
I agree with this.
But all of a sudden, like, he's going to get hit by a fucking freight train in 7 months because he's going to be a senior. And when senior year hits, he's going to be like, I'm still out of shape. Like, I don't have a job. I don't know what's happening here. You know, so I think he has a great, great little run ahead of him here in this sixth semester, of school. But got to make it happen. You know, it's time to kind of sort your life out and figure out where you're headed, because with where he's at right now, if he makes it too much longer without any action, then all of a sudden it's just like kind of panic button, and the odds that things work out at that point are really damn low. So
I feel like we got no issues physically or anything else through 2026. Does that sound accurate? Like, I feel like he's got easily another 4 years where he can compete at the highest level.
I think that's reasonable. Is he really 32? He looks
32.
So I, okay. He's just
seen some shit.
He just looks old as shit. Yeah. I mean,
that's what you get when you're
the Northwestern Englishman. He was, you know, ripping darts at age 9, drinking when he was 6. So
you
anyway,
shampoo for the first time
to our final one. We'll move on to our final award here. And this is an important award. This is, you know, the namesake of this award is the recipient of this award. I will not. Everyone will understand what I'm saying here in a minute. I will never let that go. But this is the Mr. Clean Award, and this is important. It's very important for people to fully understand this award. Mr. Clean, of course, being our Lord and Savior Tiger Woods, who doesn't support quite the head of hair that he used to. But the Mr. Clean Award, it's not just the Tiger Woods Award. It is the Tiger Woods as Mr. Clean Award. He wasn't always Mr. Clean. He's been Mr. Clean for how long? 6 or 7 years? It's been a while. But there was a time at which he had never a great head of hair, but he had a little bit on there. But what Mr. Clean means to me is this is a guy that, like, we want to think that he's going to be there every week and that we can think about him contending 5 or 6 times a year. But at the end of the day, this shit's just not going to happen. Like, if we can get a performance or two out of Mr. Clean each and every year, that's something to celebrate. And I think that's realistically where our expectations should be. And so that's why I say, like, Tiger Woods circa 2012, 2013, even, that's not Mr. Clean. I mean, when that guy's good, he's showing up and bringing it every single week. But in the Mr. Clean era, that's just not a reasonable expectation. So I'll toss it to you to break down a guy who, you know, he's not gone. Like, he is not, the ship has not sailed, but week in, week out contention is just not a realistic thing anymore.
Yeah, I feel like the wardrobe has been indicative of this person's shift from whatever pre-Mr. Clean was to the Mr. Clean era.
I think, you know? I know where you're headed.
Yeah, I'm going with Adam Scott.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. I knew it.
Because I so badly want to see Adam Scott, like, crush the world again. He's like the Roger Federer of our sport, you know? Just great-looking guy.
Definitely
golf
not
swing
Mr.
Is,
Clean. He's got a pretty mop.
Yeah, dude. Just fucking stellar. And just got the swing to pair. Like, if you don't like what you're seeing, I just struggle. And he's just, he's like Tiger in the sense where you're not really going to see him a whole lot. He's not going to put himself out there a whole lot. But you can expect him to show up a couple times a year and play really solid golf with the big boys. And I would say this year has been a bit of a tailspin. Like, we've seen some good performances out of him. T5 at Wells Fargo, hard golf course. T8 at Byron Nelson is what it is. T9 at Memorial, great field, great golf course, difficult golf course. T7 at Wyndham, T7 at BMW, you know, almost made it to East Lake. That's good shit, you know, but it's not great shit. And we know he's capable of that. And I am just scratching for one more Scotty run. Like, I want it so bad. I'm not sure if I'm going to get it, but just one more really great win out of him would just be awesome. So that's it.
Only thing I'll add there is, you know, he's a guy that we hold to a very high standard. And so that bar is high, you know, like of another course. PGA Tour win, although it would be really fun. Like, I'm there for any great golf out of Scotty. Like, when you say one more great one, we're talking majors. Like, it would be so cool to see him make one more run. I put Justin Rose in a similar camp. Like,
yes. Yeah.
It doesn't do a ton for me to see him win Riviera. It'd be really cool. I'd love to see him do it because I know it'd make him fired up. But when we say another run, we're talking, like, these are proper ass golfers, some of the best of our generation that we would love to see make another run at a major. It'd be really cool. It'd be really darn cool. Be really cool if Mr. Clean himself would do it. I mean, it hurts, but I think this is the this is the best way that I can begin to bring closure to the situation, I think is the best way for me to kind of try to somehow articulate my thoughts and feelings on this one, that my recipient of the Mr. Clean Award is Jordan Spieth. And I was kind of scratching and clawing here, trying to figure out what kind of award can I give to Jordan and Justin, and like, what, where are we at? You know, where are we at? That's the question here. What is going on? And JT, I think, is just, my take on JT is he's too good at too many things. And, you know, you got to stick to your guns, like the inevitable peaks and valleys of golf. Like he is in a valley and a half, you know, and he found a little stream, and then there's like a deep eddy in that stream. And he's like, he swam all the way to the bottom and he got tangled in some roots, and he's fucking at the depths of the valley as far down as it goes. But he's just too good and too young and too fit. And there's just too much going for JT for him to not return to a level of dominance in my mind. And I think he's going to be better for it. I think going through some shit like this, I don't know if it's this year, I don't know if it's next year. I would be shocked if within the next 3-ish years, we don't see that JT that returns to number one in the world, or has at least a stretch of time where he is a bad, bad man. So I didn't really have an award for that, but the Mr. Clean Award is an important one, and Jordan's an important guy. And, you know, two kids now, like, yes, I know he's got this perspective that we talk about, but I just think that he's heading into a stage of life more so. I mean, we're getting deep here, where he's not going to be able to dig it out of the dirt like he once did. And look, I'll throw in the caveat that, like, maybe that's exactly what we need on Team Spieth, and I am on Team Spieth, is for him to quit fucking hitting 9 million golf balls a day and like banging his head against the wall. I think he legitimately does bang his head against the wall, if we're being honest. I think he's, you know, with Spieth, I think the other one we could have done is the Dobby Award. I think he probably wakes up some mornings after a bad session, grabs the lamp. Jordan. But anyway, I just think that at this point, like, where I go with kind of moving into this next stage of life is, I don't think he's going to be able to be the guy that he once was. And the way that, to me, he needs to treat the game is the way he once did. And realistically, he's A, too good to not have some performances that are still going to be super inspiring. Like, when he's good, he's still just so damn good. You know, Augusta is too well set up for him to not have at least 2 more years, 3 more years there where things come together. He makes all the putts, and it's just, does he win? I don't know, but he's going to be making runs at it. But then going the other direction, there are just too many majors, because he's another one of these guys, kind of like we talked about with Scott, where it's like he's measured on the majors. There are too many weeks where the course doesn't really set up, and all of a sudden it's like, man, you played hard. You made some putts. Like, you fought for it, and you finished 83rd, you know, which I guess that would probably just be a quick MC Hammer. But like, it wasn't even close, and you like looked like you were grinding, you know. And then you got these guys like Scheffler that it's like, man, you did everything wrong, and you finished not 83rd but 3rd, you know. And it looked like everything sucked. And so the final thing I'm going to say here with Spieth, it's somewhat embarrassing to say, but I spent a lot of time pontificating about Jordan Spieth, and, you know, just to myself. And when you really break it down, like, the guy has 3 majors, and he won them in what, a stretch of 11 majors, 12 majors. That was back when the Open was the final one. No. It was a stretch of 11 majors, because that's before the Open was the final major of the year. 2015 to 2017, he wins the 2015 Masters, 2015 US Open, and then the 2017 Open Championship. It's not that different than Padraig. Padraig wins 3 out of 5, and like, yeah, look, like, hats off to the guy. He's got 3 majors, but like, no one's sitting around saying Padraig Harrington is like one of the tip top players of the generation. because he did have the success. But when it's so condensed like that, you don't look at a guy and say like, hey, he had like a really long drawn out career. He was there like all the time. To me, that's a little bit more JT. Like, I think, yes, he's in this bad spot now, but that's kind of what I led with. Like, JT, I just think he's too good to not continue to have years and years where he's just at the top of the pile every time. Rory, same thing. Like, Rory's going to win more majors. I know he's going to. And you're going to look at him when he retires with six or seven of them and say, man, like, there were some lower points in there, but like, he's been good every single year. I'm starting to be able to come to grips with the fact that I think Spieth, like, he just had a great, great stretch of years. And I hate myself for the words that are coming out of my mouth. I hate myself. But I think he had a really hot stretch. The putter was great. Somehow the tape was tight. Like, the physio wrapped him up with all that K tape just right. Like, just a great tape job, and everything held together there for like three straight years. And now the physio, he just cannot remember. He can't remember the recipe. He just can't remember what is going to make things right. And I think that's what it takes. And it's gone. It's the Mr. Clean Award.
That was fucking awesome. Mudball Monday, everyone. We'll keep you posted. Have a great week. And thanks for being here.
I'm going to go cry.
At the Tie Podcast.